Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The sound you are listening to is the KMA Astrospurt Junction Gate Field Effect Phaser. Fasten your seatbelt and get lost in the wide, warm and soft soundscapes generated by this pedal. The Astrospurt is KMA's take on the classic four-stage JFET-based phaser. The addition of a signal control allows you to lightly drive the effect. The spurt control gives you access to all the vintage phaser speeds right up to warp speed fast vibrato-style tones. The switchable emphasis mode gives you access to a range of fuzzy, out-of-this-world phaser sounds in conjunction with four dip switches and three rotary controls inside the pedal. The Astrospurt is everything you need from a phaser, plus a world of extra spacey sounds. Now available worldwide from your favourite online retailer, or visit kma-machines.com. And welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton. And I'm joined this week by the wonderful Jay Cross.
Go!
Matthew Knight.
Go!
And Mark Packham.
Go!
Impressive, Mark. Well done.
I tell you what, I hadn't even breathed in. I wasn't ready to do that.
That was good. You got a good set of lungs on you.
I really miss football. Miss football. It's so good, man. So good, and there's just nothing on. I tell you what, I miss football so much. I came really close to finding a FIFA tournament to watch on YouTube because I was just like, I need to watch something. Like,
Have you not got FIFA? Can you not just do computer versus computer?
Demo mode.
I probably could, to be honest with you. I probably could do that.
I hate to say it, lads. I'm missing professional wrestling so much. I've been doing that on Firefly
Wrestling. The Rock versus The Rock.
Lining up some dream matches and watching them play out in real time.
Just quickly, talking of The Rock, and I will post this in the group. I was, as with most people at the moment, just tidying up because you don't get much time to just tidy stuff up. And I found an old picture of me aged, I would say, let's go with 11, wearing a Rock t-shirt.
Yes. Wow.
Probably got my autobiography somewhere there.
That is impressive. My sister actually sent me a picture of me. I must have been like 8 or 9 in my wrestler outfit the other day, which was good. I had my
What do you mean your wrestler outfit?
I had a wrestler outfit that I wore around the house.
Big Boss Man.
Yeah, it was. I think I was called Spider Bat Boy because I wore I wore Spider Man trousers, a Batman top, and then a cowboy vest. And so I
would have gone with Spider-Man cow if I was honest.
As a child, I probably thought that this sounded better. I had the skills of all three of those things. I was quick on the draw like a cowboy. I could jump around
like Spider-Man and, you know, I don't know, I guess I was slightly unhinged like Batman.
You know, wrestlers the, often known for using guns like the Cowboys.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Anyway,
just before we move off that, like speaking of live sport and stuff, have you seen the one sport that is persevering through all of this and has decided that it is going to continue showing live sport? The Grand Slam of darts, because all the darts players have got darts boards at home, so they're just live streaming from home.
That is brilliant.
And then Sky Sports is just going to be commentating on these geezers stood in their spare room playing darts.
Not all
darts.
Geezers, Jay. They're,
no, okay, not all geezers.
Are now a mixed sport. So,
and quite right, bloody lovely as well. Bloody lovely.
I was reading about that, and they are having issues because a lot of them like live in areas where they don't have good enough Wi-Fi to be able to put something together to send out to Sky to do it. So they're like overcoming those challenges at the moment, which, you know, I think it's for the good of the nation that we have a full Grand Slam of darts.
It was, I'm all for it. I think it's fantastic.
It was probably a bigger shake-up from when they first banned drinking, because I remember when they first did it, there was a couple of... Was it Andy Fordham, the Viking?
When they banned drinking in darts.
When they banned drinking, like you
couldn't have... When they banned darts players from drinking.
Yeah. Basically, you couldn't hold a pint while you were throwing darts. And loads of players were like started to perform really badly because they got so used to the balance of holding a pint and darts. But they were like, oh... So loads of darts players had to like readjust how they played because they couldn't hold a pint.
Man, there's definitely a wormhole to go down here, like a rabbit hole to go down. I just googled drinking ban in darts, and the page that it brings up is split in darts. So what I think happened one of the
this is going to be like an NFL XFL thing.
I think it's RIP XFL. I think what happened is the BDO split off from the WDC, the World Darts Council, I think. And yeah, I need to read into it, but I'm assuming it was to do with being able to drink and not being able to drink while you play darts. I'll read up.
Absolutely brilliant.
Wow. Fantastic.
Well, on this week's episode of the Gitanes podcast, other than talking about darts, football and wrestling, we are also going to be talking about guitars, amplifiers and effects pedals. we're going to be taking some questions, maybe, from the Guitar Nerds Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/Guitar Nerds forum. Join that if you aren't already there. Become part of our wonderful community of guitar lovers. But also on this week's episode, we're going to be talking about some pedals that we've been checking out. There's a little bit of news, but I've also designed a mini quiz, which is in fact going to span the next three episodes of this podcast. Yeah, it's going to be exciting. But before we do any of that, I need to introduce our new patrons for this week. We've got two upgrades, two new additions to the $10 tier. This week, Shane M joins us in the $10 tier, as does previous Facebook Guitar Nerds quiz co-winner Joe Puttick in our $10 tier. So welcome Shane and Joe. Thank you very much for being part of the team.
That's people who aren't commuting at the moment. Yeah. spending their train fare, spending their petrol money on us. Thanks very much.
That's it. Yeah, thank you, guys. Thank you. Also joining them is Frederick Roos, Stephen Hamilton and Jason McGrath. So thanks very much. Welcome to the Patreon side of Guitar Nerds.
Have you got a round of applause soundboard or something you can...
I can put one in. Yeah, there it is right there. Thanks, Jay. That's a little bit of extra work for me tomorrow when I edit. Wonderful.
You know, you know how I like to work.
Now, also this week we are continuing to do our wonderful pink giveaway. So we've teamed up with Tate Effects, Marcus Deluxe pedal boards, Ashdown amplification, and Bright Onion pedals to bring you a big pink giveaway. The winner of the competition receives a custom pink Tate Effects Antares Overdrive, a Guitar Nerds pink Marcus Deluxe slatted pedal board, a whole bunch of pink accessories from Ernie Ball, cables, wristbands, an Ernie Ball pint glass, and even a selection of Guitar Ned's gravity picks. You'll also receive a custom pink Tolex Ashdown Rootmaster single 15 cabinet and an ABY switcher, a pink ABY switcher made by Bright Onion Pedals with a Guitar Ned's logo on it. So a whole bunch of pink stuff, which is pretty cool. And all you've got to do to enter, entry is open worldwide. Oh, God. Not looking forward to the cost of that cab. Yeah, I know, but it's I've said
oh,
it.
Oh, no, so. No, sorry. No, it's got a UK plug. That can only... Yeah, that passive cabinet can only be... It's got a UK plug, I'm afraid. Yeah.
So we're praying that our Australian audience is small. but yeah, all you've got to do to enter is visit any one of our social media channels, find the entry post and comment on that post, tagging a friend who you think should also enter. We're going to announce the winner on Wednesday, the 6th of May. So you've got until the 4th of May to enter, which is pretty exciting.
Before you jump into anything else, I just wanted to bring up a topic of conversation that came up in the Facebook group this week. And I actually thought it was quite interesting. And I answered very quickly. And then I've kind of taken a step back and I'm trying to decide whether or not I do agree with myself. So Phil Robles in the group asked a question yesterday saying, since we're all locked on whiteboard, let's argue over stuff that doesn't matter. What is the correct... he wants to know what the correct way to describe a cabinet that has got four 12-inch speakers. So the suggestions...
Is it multiple choice or...?
The suggestions that have been put forward are, do you call it a 4x12? Do you call it a 412?
Is that
there
it?
There were some other things, but yeah. Do you call it a 4x12 or do you call it a 412?
A 412 I go for.
Mark?
I use those two interchangeably, I think.
Yeah,
I would say depends who I'm talking to and in what context. I think if it was in a technical sense, I would say 412. Like if I was like, oh, you know, we just need to get this Marshall 412 or whatever. But I think if I was talking about that to like just in general conversation, I'd be like, yeah, Marshall head and a 4x12.
Yeah, Marshall head and a 41-2.
Matty, what about you?
I think if we were talking on, I'm just thinking about the podcast, I'd probably say just 412.
Would I say 412 or 4x12?
I don't know.
So just looking...
That question has confused me.
So looking at this, both you and me, and incidentally, friend of the podcast, Dan Grace, all said 4x12. And I was immediately like, yep, 4x12. What are you talking about? Absolutely 4x12. And then I started thinking about it a bit more. And actually, I don't think I do say 4x12. I think I do tend to say 412. But then again... With my Ampeg cab, that's absolutely an 8. Oh, is that an 810?
812.
It's an
810. 812. What are you talking about? It's not an 812, Matt.
It's an 812.
810. 8x10. 8x10, I think.
Oh,
810?
Yeah. 8x10 cab.
It's an 810.
810 cab? Do I have an 810 cab or do I have an 8x10?
Ampeg 810. Ampeg 8x10. Ampeg 810.
810.
It's an 810. 115, 412, 212.
Yeah, but I would...
Though sometimes I say 115.
But I think if I was saying cab after it, would I say Ampeg 810 cab? No, I wouldn't. I would say Ampeg 810 cab.
Yeah, Marshall 412, Ampeg 810.
Marshall 4x12 cab.
Or No.
There's no
buy. So, no, you're right. If you're not saying cab, then you don't put the buy.
Yeah, exactly that.
So it's an Ampeg 810.
Yeah, Marshall 412 or Marshall 4x12 cab.
Okay. So
does
wait.
That make sense? Yeah,
so,
I think
so. Wait, so you're interchangeable.
Yeah,
so what
yeah,
are you,
definitely.
Matt? Are you bi or are you without?
I'm so confused. Honestly, the more I think about it, the harder the question becomes.
My favourite answer on this is someone has said, Chris Basden has said Marshall cab doesn't matter the brand. Have you got a Marshall cab I can use? Oh, no, I don't. I've got this PV. Yeah. That's what I said. Yeah.
great.
Yeah, that works for me.
So this week I sent a few things up to you, Matthew Knight, and it is the thing you've checked out is something we've spoken about before, but you are far more a connoisseur of effects pedals than I. So you've received the Origin Effects Revival Trem.
Yes, I thought
you are very excited by this.
I thought it would just be worth just quickly picking up on this again now that I've had a chance to really dive into it, and it is possibly one of the greatest things I've ever plugged into. Obviously everyone knows the first pedal that came out was the Revival Drive, the pedal that had 29 onboard controls. Most people said was like too ridiculous to like dial in. So they obviously brought out the Revival Drive Compact, which is their mini version with a little bit of, you know, a scaled back control set, which people have kind of been really like, you know, digging, basically. Just a really amazing drive pedal, because they're claiming that they've effectively recreated an amplifier power amp circuit in all analog circuitry. So even the way that the valves were, even the way that the valves would work is replicated in like various transistors. And then obviously at NAMM they released the Revival Trem, which takes that same idea, but basically builds a 1962 brown-faced Fender Deluxe. So I was thinking, great, you know, I really want to try like a really nice bias trem. And then I was like, oh, well, you have to have the drive circuit on, which is something we discussed. You have to turn the amp circuit on to basically turn the tremolo on. And for the first half an hour, didn't even turn the trem on. The drive section alone, which is basically just output tone and drive, is one of the most dynamic, diverse, incredible sounding distortions I've ever plugged into.
And it's not just those two settings, there are three presets that you can
There's basically what they call post drive EQ, which is basically just tailoring it to what sort of amp you're going into, because it's obviously an amp in a pedal in the sense that they have fully recreated this amp power amp circuit in an analog pedal. You wouldn't necessarily plug that into the front of an amp's preamp. So plugging it into a Fender or a Marshall or a Vox or whatever. So the post-drive EQ lets you tailor into the front of an amp, or you can plug it straight into a power amp if you want and then just use this. So you could pair this with a Moore Baby Bomb if you wanted to. But as a drive pedal, like as something that takes something like my Morgan PR12, which is actually like a Princeton, that I can't really crank to, you know, the level where it'd start to distort. You can use this to get more than a distortion pedal. It just sounds like a cranked amp. And it's as dynamic as a cranked amplifier. Like, honestly, I can't describe how amazed I was just plugging it in. Like, it's one of the few, you know, we tried more drive pedals than anything else. And they're also one of the ones that have got like the widest amount of variation. And for me, there's a couple of sounds I always just go, they're the sounds I'd want on a pedal board. And I plug this in and I'm just like, this just, it feels like a crank damp. I think that's the thing, is you get a lot of Marshall in a Box or, you know, whatever.
It's so reactive to your playing.
Exactly.
Like, it's such a dynamic drive.
But the only thing I would say is it takes a little while to dial in the post-drive EQ to tailor it into the front of the amp that you're using. And if you're using two amps in stereo, it can be tricky because you're, you know, they're two very different amps that you're running into. But once you've sort of dialed it in, like, you basically can't dial in a bad sound with the output, yeah, the tone and the drive. You can have
incredible.
It just as like a make good run, leave it on all the time. You can absolutely crank it and it's just like a real vintage, like cranked Fender. And then you've got the trem, and it's like a proper bias trem. It's rich, it's authentic, it's very touch sensitive. I mean, the pedal itself is like weighty. It's probably the heaviest pedal I've ever held. It feels like Thor's hammer. It's ridiculous.
I thought the trem was actually incredible, because the trem is so dynamic that you can set it so that as you play softly, you get a lot of that tremolo coming through, but if you dig in, you can actually play over the tremolo, essentially, which was just amazing.
Yeah, because I went...
Sorry, stop. Say that again.
So if you dig in, you can get back your full signal.
So you can kind of overcome
the tremolo. It's that
right,
dynamic.
Okay, yeah. Okay, wow.
Because a bias trem is obviously physically like pushing and pulling power from the valves.
Totally.
So yeah, it's really dynamic in that way. I came into it going, I want a really good trem pedal, and I'm just going to have to set the preamp, basically, or the amp section of it, just so it doesn't really sound any different, because I just want to use the trem. And then basically came out of it going, don't even really want to turn the trem on half the time. Basically, it's just so good as just an amp in a box. And what was really interesting was working out where you run it in a signal chain, because... You go, it's a drive, I should run lightest to heaviest gain. You know, that's the rule of thumb that most people... But because it's an amp circuit, I thought, well, actually, I'll place it before any delays, but after any other drives. So I'm actually running like loads of...
It as a preamp.
You're basically, running it as a preamp. So I'm running like a fuzz into it. And it totally changes the whole dynamic and feel of the fuzz, because you're running into this really dynamic, like, preamp. And I mean... You know, it is expensive. I think they're like nearly £400. But one, you feel the quality straight out of the box. And even though, I'd say it probably took a good 10, 15 minutes to dial it in. Once you've dialed it in, you never want to turn it off. And that's why for about the next day or so, I just kept texting Jay about buying a Princeton. Because I was like, man, if this is what a cranked Princeton sounds like, I need to buy a Princeton. This thing sounds amazing. Well, actually, like a cranked deluxe. I was like, I need to buy a Fender amp. I just was really, really blown away. And what's interesting is, would have never got that if I'd demoed it at NAMM. Because... Yeah.
You got to turn it up and feel it and stuff.
Yeah, it's the subtle nuances of these things.
Yeah, and I think what's amazing as well is how differently it reacted to different guitars. You know, because I started dialing it in with my Tele, and it was, you know, it's quite bright and quite snappy. And then I plugged in my Music Man. I was like, guys, there's loads more gain. And then I plugged in the Strat and was like, every guitar felt like totally different.
I uploaded a little video of demo of this on the group and on the Instagram, listener, if you want to check it out. And I used a Les Paul for that.
Yeah, I mean, running in the Nick Huber, which has got the really vintage like Sun Bear pickups in it, it's like, man, I think the downside to this pedal is there's no presets. It's like so many good sounds in it. I was like, you are literally just gonna have to, you know, you're always just going to want to tweak it. I think for recording, if you're at home and you're looking for, you know, building a pedal board, you can't have an amp, and you just go, look, I just want a really good sounding Fender amp, for example, but I don't want to, I literally can't turn anything up. I'm running into an interface. This is just hands down one of the best things I've tried. It's brilliant.
If Origin FX ever release a reverb, if they were to do it in a single box with this, this drive and the tremolo, that would be your absolute solution for going straight into a power amp, or just, you know, going straight into an IR.
Yeah, I think if you went this into an IR, if you went this into, like I said, I'd say even like just a Moore Baby Bomb. Because I was thinking, oh, you could go this into like a Strymon Iridium, but the Iridium's already got the amp models in it. Really, what you want is just a really clean power amp platform to just drive, to be able to drive a cab, basically. But I think unlike other drive, I mean, there's lots of drive pedals that are dynamic, but this feels like plugging into an amp rather than plugging into a distortion pedal. Absolutely, massively impressed. And if that's what they come out with in terms of the trem, I'm really keen to try the drive and see where it goes. So.
Yes, I will send that to you as well, because we do have that, and it is a little bit more affordable than the Revival trem. So, and it also has more controls on it. So so potentially there's you know, there's the ability to create even more sounds.
For me, potential gear of the year, I think it's brilliant.
Did it come out this year?
It did.
Yes, it did. Yeah.
Oh, did it? Okay, fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is real potential for Gear of the Year. It's definitely one of the things I've been most impressed with.
Well, judging by the news over the last couple of weeks, it's not going to have that much competition. So yeah, I think say it's got a good chance.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So far, so good.
Mark Packham.
Hello there.
You want to talk to me about skateboard games?
I do. I do. The reason being, so I've not played that much guitar this week, just with everything that's going on and stuff, and but actually weirdly being super busy. I'm sure everyone listening is feeling this, like, you know, I normally do no phone calls in the evenings, and now I'm doing like 10 every evening to catch up with people and stuff. So actually sitting down and playing guitar, I haven't had much time. But what I did get a chance to do on the weekend was found a way to play Tony Hawk's 2, the legendary PlayStation 1 skateboarding game, on my telly. And what's this got to do with guitars, I hear you say. What's this got to do with guitars?
What has this got to do with guitars?
The soundtrack to Tony Hawk's 2 is one of the best curated soundtracks that's ever been in any media ever. And I think it's made me like just want to play like rap rock music, like new metal now. I think that's what I'm going for. So and then the upshot of that is I've been watching some stuff today. So I was watching Limp Bizkit live at Rockhammering 2001 just before we started the podcast, and the guitar on that video is the filthiest sounding guitar I think I've ever heard.
What was
PRS into Boogie, I think. I couldn't actually see the amps that he was using because it's in like,
I think he used a dual rec, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so as well. But in that particular video, so the stage is like totally dark, and Wes Borland is like completely covered head to toe in silver paint, and he just has a spotlight on him. So you can't actually see what the amps are behind him. But yeah, I think it's PRS. But
he
it sounds
PRS, did he? I thought he had a signature Ibanez.
No, he had a signature Yamaha.
Yeah.
Yamaha.
Yeah, down the line, but he was always PRS to begin with. Yeah.
Joe, it was 1999. Who didn't play PRS?
Well, sure.
That was literally like the get started kit for most people at that point. It's like, here's your PRS and here's your Mesa Boogie.
Totally. And the guitar tone on that video is like being slapped with a leg of lamb. It's it's unbelievable how like filthy and like in your face it is. But yeah, so I've been listening to that. I checked out some Anthrax as well, because the, you know, the memorable tune, the most memorable tune from the Tony Hawk soundtrack is Anthrax and Public Enemy, Bass How Low Can You Go. So I've been listening to a little bit of Anthrax. The thing about Anthrax, and I never ever listened to them before, probably the first time ever listening to them outside of playing Tony Hawk's was today. All the stuff on YouTube, I guess, is their singles, because it's like all really poppy.
You've always been my safe home. Was that them? Yeah. That was them, wasn't it?
Don't know. There was one about Madhouse, which was like kind of 80s hair rock.
Safe Home was the big one. That was right. That was him. But they're a thrash band, aren't they?
Well, but that's what I mean. That's what I was expecting from looking up Anthrax videos on YouTube. Turns out they also did like loads of kind of radio rock stuff. So yeah, I want to dive into that over the next week or so, and I will report back on my odyssey into thrash.
The lineup, like you say, the track listing is just absolutely ridiculous. I mean,
Papa Roach,
Rage Against Gorilla Radio by Rage Against the Machine. Yeah. I mean, that song is I think I talked about this recently. I kind of was never really that into Rage Against the Machine back when this came out, you know, when I was 13, 14, when people kind of get into Rage Against the Machine. I was never really that bothered about it. But I've recently started listening to Battle of Los Angeles again, and that record is so good. It's so good, and Gorilla Radio's on there. But yeah, You by Bad Religion, like one of their best songs. I mean, maybe their best song. No Cigar by Mill and Colin. May 16th by Lagwagon. I mean, it was a formative time for me. Like, some of the songs that come out of this are just absolutely incredible. But I just Googled it to find out, like, just to see what was on there, because I couldn't really remember. And I've been taken to a article from GameSpot, from which is Activision has. So this is an article from 2000. So 20 years on, it's still on the internet. Activision have confirmed the final lineup of bands to be featured on the soundtrack for Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2. And then at the bottom, they've got a they've got sponsored link, so you can go through and buy it on Walmart. And Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 for the Game Boy Color is still a product page on Walmart.com.
$15.59.
So ridiculous. I wonder if you click that, you can get an in-stock alert. So it's not available right now, but they'll send us an email when it comes back into stock. So I'll do that, and I'll buy it for my Game Boy Color. Bloody lovely.
Sweet.
Excellent.
Exactly, so yeah, more updates on Thrash stuff next week.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, boys, I have for this week designed a mini quiz that is going to span the next three episodes.
Bloody hell, how many questions is it?
Well, here's the thing. Only one of you is going to be quizzed each week.
Oh, bum.
Yeah,
bum.
So that is the drill. Basically, the way this is going to work is there are each week, one of you is going to have three rounds. There are going to be three questions in each round. So it's just a mini quiz. You've just got to deal with nine questions each week. But you have a selection of rounds that you get to choose from. Whoever's being asked the question gets to choose the rounds. And I'll tell you the titles of the rounds in a minute. The problem is there are a finite amount of rounds. So each of the rounds have two sets of questions. So whoever ends up on the third week is going to have less choices of rounds to pull from the person on the first week, meaning that the person on the first week could well choose rounds that they think are more tailored to their tastes and leave someone in the later weeks have some of the harder questions. Although the rounds aren't dealt with by hardness, they are just they're just different titles. So
Joe, I'm not gonna lie, I've had a glass of wine, I've understood nothing about what you've just said.
Yeah,
okay, all right.
Just give
Can
me
give
questions.
Us an example.
Okay,
so what you're saying is there's three that you've done nine rounds of three questions.
Let me just explain. So there will be, so each week one of you will have to answer nine questions. Those nine questions will be split into three rounds, and you will get to decide what rounds you answer from. So I'll let you know what the rounds are now. These are the things you can choose to answer questions from. The round titles are Strats, The Rolling Stones, Electro Harmonics, Vintage Amplification, and Retro Twangers.
What do you call me?
Those are the rounds. However, each of those subjects only has two sets of three questions. So, for example, if Jay was selected this week, he could choose to answer two of his three rounds on Strats, meaning there would be no Strats questions for next week.
Got it. I see.
So whoever ends up on the third round is going to end up with a greatly depleted bank of questions to answer from, and they could well end up just having to answer questions on Vintage Amplification and Retro Twangers, for example.
This episode of Guitar Nerds is brought to you by Shergold Guitars and their latest electric guitar, the Provocateur. Celebrated by Total Guitar Magazine as one of the most refined single cuts on the market, with endlessly satisfying playability and a flawless set of tones, the Shergold Provocateur combines remarkable specification with a retro vibe for a unique and bona fide rock guitar. From the brand that once powered the likes of Joy Division and is now championed by modern guitar pioneers and So I Watch You From Afar and many others, comes a fresh and exciting range of electric guitars. Designed by legendary British guitar luthier Patrick James Eggle and featuring a roasted mahogany neck and a solid mahogany body loaded with USA-made Seymour Duncan pickups, it's easy to see why Guitarist Magazine officially voted the Provocateur one of the best electrics of 2019. You can find your nearest Shergold dealer at shergoldguitars.com. And if you're not in the UK, don't fear. Many UK-based Shergold dealers have super awesome international shipping options to guarantee your Shergold will make it to you in the most far-flung of places. Proudly stand out from the crowd and discover yours today at shergoldguitars.com. Shergo Guitars. Be your own original. A homage to the original Ernie Ball Music Man Sabre guitar of the late 70s. Ernie Ball engineers and design team have put a modern spin on the classic instrument for 2020. The Sabre guitar features an Akume body, a carved maple top, and custom Ernie Ball Music Man humbucking pickups, delivering lively, dynamic sound with a striking clarity and sustain. Aesthetically, the Sabre is equally compelling. Its book-matched premium top, adorned with natural binding, which elegantly highlights the raw beauty of the figured maple wood grain. This is a true Blair's guitar, offered in the Cobra, Bougie Burst, Honeysuckle, and Blue Moonstone finish options. Visit music-man.com to learn more. That's music-man.com. Now, back to the show.
So how are we deciding who goes first?
Well, of course, the only way for me to do something, to just choose one person, is for me to ask you all an arbitrary question. So it would be the same as rolling a dice, essentially.
Okay.
Okay? That's the way we're going to decide. So what the question will be is, I am thinking of a year. It's an important year for guitars, but of course that really doesn't narrow it down. I'm thinking of a year. I need you each to say a year, and then whoever's closest is going to go this week. So,
fine.
So, Mark Packham.
1962.
Matt Knight.
I just got to say a year.
Yeah.
1984.
Jay Cross. I mean, you've got to think of a year that's going to be important to music, and you've gone for something in the 80s, Matt Knight. But okay.
I thought you were just...
No, you've done it now, mate.
I wasn't even listening, to be honest.
Okay, Jay Cross.
I also was going to go with 1962, but I will instead go with 1961.
I was... in fact, thinking of the year 1962.
Of course, yes. You were. It's like so obvious.
So don't worry. That means that you are going to be next week, Jay Cross, and
okay.
Matt Knight will be on the third week. So
on the third week, he'll rise again.
So Mark Packham,
remind
you
me
now
of my categories.
You get to choose. So here are the rounds. You can choose one at a time. So you can choose from Strats.
Why yep. were you thinking of 62?
The because I'm thinking of buying an old fuzz pedal, and so
right.
those
that
old
makes
maestros.
More sense. If you'd have said that, I would have picked a year that you were thinking of. You just said pick a year.
No, I did not.
I've got no reference.
I literally said a year that's important for guitars. But okay.
Yeah, it's 84. Dan Smith Strat. He basically reinvented the Strat. Basically, right. just redesigned the modern Strat. Come on, Joe. Think
I'm
about
sorry.
It.
I'm sorry, Matt. I'm sorry. So, Mark Packham, your round choices are: you can choose Strats, the Rolling Stones, Electro Harmonix, Retro Twangers, or Vintage Amplification. That choice again is Strats, the Rolling Stones, Electro Harmonix, Retro Twangers, or Vintage Amplification.
Let's go Strats. Bring it on.
He's going straight in with Strats. Okay. First question in the first of the two Strat categories. When was the Fender Stratocaster first released?
Bloody hell, Joe.
1954.
That is correct. Well
yes.
done, Mark Packham.
Woo.
Well done. Congratulations.
I almost said 1962.
I'm glad you said that.
Well
okay,
done,
so...
Mark. You know the year that the most successful guitar ever invented was released. Top work there, mate.
Okay.
I try
okay.
my hardest.
Here we go. So he's good. 100% out of
100
one
points.
Question. So question two. How many screws were in the original one-ply plate on a Stratocaster?
Ooh. Hang on, I need to think about this a minute.
Oh, he's going to Google. He's Googling.
Seven.
I can hear him.
Seven.
Yeah.
You are incorrect, I'm afraid. It's 8. You were very close, though. Very close. But it's okay. You still got 50% of the questions right. So the third and final question in your strats round. Oh, my God. Excellent choice here. Well done, Mark. What Rubber Soul track featured a dual Stratocaster solo?
Nowhere Man?
Yes, you are absolutely right. It is Nowhere Man.
Yeah.
Well done. Well done. Because, of course, I think that was the first record they got their matching Stratocaster.
I believe it was, Joe. You're correct.
Wonderful. Well done. So out of strats, you got 2 out of the 3 questions. So now it comes back to the round choice again. So you can actually choose to answer 3 more questions on strats. The rounds again that you can choose from are strats, the Rolling Stones, electro harmonics, retro twangers, and vintage amplification.
Joe, I'm going to go strats.
He's going straight in with strats. Is this a ploy to reduce the questions that Jay is going to be good at answering for Jay's round? I don't know. Excuse me.
I'm very good at questions and that.
You are, but I'm saying you would have probably nailed the strats round, but because Mark is taking the second strats round, there will be no more strats questions for you or Matt.
I'm glad because the Rolling Stones are my favourite band. Great. So I was really worried he was going to choose that. Retro Twangers, you know, that's my middle name.
Yeah,
J. Absolutely. Retro Twangers Cross.
Absolutely. That certainly is your middle name. Okay, Mark Packham.
Hello.
Shooting straight on with your second choice. This is a second batch of questions on Stratocasters. Question 1. What year was the first Alder Stratocaster produced?
Oh.
Because the Stratocaster was, of course, originally Ash.
Yeah, I actually don't know the answer to this.
Think about it. Why would you move to Alder instead of Ash?
Yeah, probably because cheaper and lighter, I'd imagine. I'm going to say 1972.
Unfortunately, you were wrong. It was a good stab. It was only 2 years after the original. It was 1956.
Oh, right. Okay.
The reason was because ash at the time was very difficult to get a nice clean finish on. They had to repair a lot of holes. There was a lot of pitting, and they wanted to make Sunburst a real mainstay color of the Stratocaster.
Oh, there we
range.
Go.
But nonetheless, a good effort. Question two. What was the third fretboard wood introduced by Fender in 1989? Exclusively on the Stratocaster. So this is other than rosewood and maple.
When you say exclusively, has it been on other things since?
Yes, this was 1989 was the first time Fender had introduced it. They introduced it just on the Stratocaster then.
I'm going to say Pal Ferro.
Unfortunately, wrong. Again, it was ebony.
Oh, that was my other...
Yeah,
okay, fine.
There you go.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
What did they put ebony on?
Sorry?
What guitar did they put ebony on?
It was the Elite in 1989.
Okay, well, there we go.
There you go. And question three in this Stratocaster round: what famous Strat player also co-designed the Fender Showman amplifier?
Oh.
You know this.
I actually don't know this. The Showman, famous Strat player.
You get it. Well, I mean, I'd take a stab at a famous
The Showman's been around. Which Showman are we talking about? Are we talking about the original ones?
Yeah, we're talking about the 70s. First one. Yeah.
Strat players.
Late 60s.
Late 60s.
End of the 60s.
Strat
yeah.
players. Who played a Strat? What famous people played a Strat? Give me some names. Preferably the answer.
Kirk Bain?
Yep, sure.
Think about what the Showman was, like a really, really sort of twangy amplifier.
Was it Dick Dale?
It was Dick Dale.
Yes.
It was Dick Dale.
Basically gave it away.
No, ridiculous. Well, absolutely ridiculous.
I'll give you all this sort of these clues. That was fantastic.
All this sort of massaging.
So what did I get, 4 out of 6?
So what are you talking about? You've got 3 out of 6 because you got 2 in the first round,
3
and 1 in the second.
Okay,
so
fine,
3 out of 6. So that's the end of that round. You've got you've half the points possible. We're now back to the round choice. So you can no longer choose Strats. Strats is off the table. So you can choose from the rounds: the Rolling Stones, Electro Harmonix, Retro Twangers, and Vintage Amplification.
I'm going to do Electro Harmonix.
Electro Harmonix it is. Okay. First question in Electro Harmonix. What was the first analog echo delay unit with no moving parts?
The Memory Man?
That is correct. Yes. The first ever echo delay pedal with non-moving parts. The Memory Man. Well done, Mark Packham. Off to a flying start. So the second question in this, and your penultimate question this week, is when was the Big Muff Pi first introduced?
1967.
Unfortunately, it was 1969. Ugh. Later than you might think. Later than you might think. In fact, really, 1970 is the year that it's cited as, but they did, in fact, make a kit for it in 1969. So it was kind of a sort of semi-trick question. But there you go. And the last question that you will answer this week: what is the name of Electro Harmonix tube-powered compressor?
They've done a few over the years. Which one are you looking for?
The current one, I guess. Whilst Joe's taking a swig, which is what it sounds like he's doing.
Yeah, weirdly, I think all of them are still current. I mean, they've done a White Finger. They did that with the tubes. They also did
the White
black...
Finger. They did not do with tubes. No, I'm afraid that is not
they
a
did.
Tube.
At the Black Finger, they did that with tubes.
The Black Finger was the tube version of the White Finger.
Yeah, okay. That's what I said. Black Finger. There you go. You point to me.
No, you said White Finger.
I mean,
I don't.
Black Finger is correct, but I'm not sure that's the answer you gave.
Fine, never mind. I said White Finger.
But no, the White Finger's not. The White Finger was a budget non-Val version of the Black Finger. That was kind of the idea behind it. But you got 1 point, which is great. So you've scored a grand total of 4 points. So all to play for. Next week.
It's not that good, is it? 4 out of 9. It's not great.
No, wasn't it 4 out of 8? Did you ask 3 Electro-Harmonix questions?
Sorry?
No, you only asked 2 Electro-Harmonix questions. Don't you owe me another question?
Yeah, the other rounds were 3 questions.
No, you did ask me.
The Memory Man.
It was 3 questions.
Yeah, the Big Muff Pie and the Black Finger.
He did.
Goodness, Joe,
Matt, are you reading some sort of pedal manual? Are you not really paying attention to us here?
Joe is just so boring. I can't pay attention.
Yeah, fair enough.
4 out of 9. That's fine. You know what they say, 4 out of 9 is not bad.
No, exactly. That is the expression. So next week, Matt and Jay, there will be all to play for. You've got left the Rolling Stones round. You've got both Rolling Stones rounds, which is good. You know, there's plenty of help on the Rolling Stones questions on our recent YouTube videos. You've got 1 Electro Harmonix question round. There's the Retro Twangers round, which mostly revolves around Dan Electro, and Vintage Amplification, which will revolve around, you know, everyone from Vox to Selma. So
I'll certainly make sure I do some boning up this week then.
There you go. Do some boning.
If I lose, I'm going to say it's because you guys had an advantage of knowing the categories.
You had the advantage of choosing the easy categories. You just got most of the questions wrong. I mean, that's sort of on you. You've had your advantage, mate. I just didn't
have 1 or 2 weeks to research knowing what the categories would be.
What year the Stratocaster came out.
Yeah. I got that one right. That's fine.
Yes, no, that's true. Yeah. So of the four questions, two of the questions you got right were, when did the Strat come out and what is the name of Electro-Harmonic's delay pedal?
I'm good at
but
this.
It was good.
Cutting edge journalism from Guitar Nerds HQ.
Yeah, absolutely. I was trying to throw in some easy ones because I think my quiz was a little bit overly hard. That we did on Facebook the other day. So I'm trying to make this one a little bit more accessible for everyone.
Anyway,
I think we should dive headfirst into a big barrel full of news. Matthew Knight.
Yes.
There obviously isn't many new releases in the world of guitars at the moment, but the first one of interest, there are a couple of things actually in your news category. Do you want to talk about effects pedals or guitars?
Let's talk about Bogner, because we've just been talking about Origin Effects. Obviously have really sort of pioneered their technology in terms of recreating that sort of valve amp circuit with all analog components. And Bogner have been doing something similar for quite some time. Basically, this is the version 2 of their audio transformer pedals. So a big part of Bogner was actually the custom audio transformer that's inside. So it's 100% analog circuit path, true bypass, but the custom audio transformer basically is a really responsive preamp from like a classic mixing console. So if I remember rightly, a lot of these have been designed by the team at Neve as well. I can't remember if this is part of that series as well or not, but I know some of the early ones were. And a big part of that was the transformer inside that is designed to recreate the same as I was saying with Origin, that feel and response of plugging into an amp or plugging straight into a desk, which is obviously something that a lot of other people have tried to create. It's the same as the Color Box from JHS. There's a couple in that range. The Bogner Harlow V2 is a boost pedal, which has what they call a bloom compression feature. So you've got a three-way toggle switch, which is basically designed to alter the kind of feel of the compression. And you can go anywhere from a really light boost all the way to kind of really high outputs. That's designed to drive your amplifier's front end. And then if you want a bit more than that, there is the Wessex V2, which is basically a little bit more high gain. And then there's a tone altering switch that basically allows you to kind of go between a sort of enhanced tone and just like a neutral tone stack, anywhere from low gain to sort of a little bit more high end. And then the Burnley is their high end, high gain version. So that's sort of crunched to much more high gain. But again, the big thing with this is that transformer section to kind of recreate the feel of plugging into an amp. And I think that's the big thing. A lot of times with high gain, it's very easy to just slam a load of gain on something and you're just like, that's just a really distorted guitar signal. And one thing I found with the Origin, and I'm guessing it's similar with that, is that you want it to actually feel dynamic, like you were plugging in. So many people are using clean pedal platforms now. And this is a way to basically have a driven platform and actually feel like you're plugged into a driven amp rather than just putting a load of gain in front of a clean amp. So yeah, really keen to kind of give these another go. I think I tried them briefly when I was Anderson's, maybe the V1 versions. They were sort of just coming back into it. But yeah, they're definitely a pedal worth checking out, which you don't talk a lot about, I guess, they're maybe just not on people's radar as much as they should be.
Incredibly reasonably priced, unlike the, you know, the Origins effects that we were talking about. Incredibly reasonably priced, these pairs.
Well, the Origins are reasonably priced. They're just reasonably expensive.
Yeah. I don't mean the Origin is very much a premium pedal, but I just mean these are alarmingly affordable, sort of at $179 a pop.
Yeah, I don't know if that just comes down to country of manufacturer. I don't know where these Bogner pedals are made. I don't know if they're made in the US or not. Obviously, the Origin, they are handmade in the UK. That's obviously going to add a little bit to the price. But yeah, you know, for what you get, you know, really, really well priced.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just looking on the press release here, it looks like a different chassis to the one that is...
on their website.
Pictured on their website, yeah. And I just wonder...
I think the ones on their website are the V1s, and the ones in the press release are the V2s.
So they're the new ones. So they've got this kind of more of a rolled, softer edge, as opposed to the older ones, which have got more of a kind of, like... I don't know. It looks like the top of the pedal is embossed down on top of the an outer ring. It looks like the newer ones, if that's what it is a more kind of all-in-one looking unit. I don't know. They both look really good. So I'd be interested to know which way around it is. Also, when you look on the website, like, there seems to be loads of different colors. Oh, you can pay extra and have a have like an exotic wood top. So I'm just looking on the Burnley on their website, and again, maybe this is just because it's the old V1s, but it looked like you can have a Bubinga exotic hardwood top panel. Yeah, really interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah, it's I was just double checking their website. Yes, Rupert Neve designed Transformer, which, if you go on the website, looks wicked.
It does look wicked.
It's like kind of little tiny little transformer that you'd see in an amplifier, but obviously designed to just be soldered onto a circuit board. But yeah, definitely worth, if you've not checked them out before, definitely having a look at some of the Bogner pedals. They've got a huge range. I think one of the big ones that popped up a lot for most people were the Ecstasy pedals, which were their high gain ones based on their amp series, which they did a big version and a small version of. But yeah, the new ones, the Wessex, the Lyndhurst, and the Harlow.
Yeah, as you say, a brand that maybe we don't talk about enough, but these look like a really cool addition.
Yeah, and I mean we never really ever talk about the amps. I mean, they've been around for probably nearly 30 years now, and obviously I think at one point they were like one of the biggest brands in America. You know, they had a huge amount of like high-end players playing for them, and I think they sort of just died off a bit. I don't know whether that was just not keeping up with the times or anything like that, but in the last sort of like 5 years or so, they've really started to kind of reimagine their brand and the kind of amps that they're making. It's not just all high gain LA metal. There's a lot more kind of classic amplifiers in there as well.
Very cool indeed. Now this month is the month of the Fender Jazz Strat, J Cross, a new addition to Fender's weird, is it called Parallel Universe still?
Yeah, Parallel Universe. Yeah, so the Parallel Universe guitars debuted 2 years ago at NAMM, and there were a bunch of kind of weird and wonderful new guitars that were kind of bungles together of old guitars and this, that, and the other. And it's where the Meteora first came from, which was a guitar that I had for a while. Absolutely loved it. Really, really cool, really interesting, really different. And the Parallel Universe Volume 2 were announced at Winter NAMM. And I think, is this the first one of the series that's actually come out? I think it might be. You know, or maybe there was one, I can't remember. I think this might be the first one, or it's one of the first ones that's actually shipping. And that is the Jazz Strat. So the Jazz Strat is a kind of a amalgamation of a Jazzmaster pickup configuration and tremolo inside the body of a Stratocaster. It comes in a really amazing look, like 50s diner. What is the color? Custom deco boom. So, oh no, sorry. That is the plate. Is the custom deco boom streamline ivory? Deco boom. I think are they a
They are a Pickguard manufacturer, I think. Is that right? Just having a quick look myself. Yes, they are. Yeah, Deco Boom make kind of boutique pickguards. So they've designed a pickguard especially for this. What is the colour? Mystic Surf Green is the colour in this one.
It's very elaborate.
Yeah, I mean, it really looks like the counter on a 50s diner. Like, if you go in, you wanna like be ordering a strawberry milkshake to drink off of this. Although that would probably void your warranty, so I wouldn't necessarily recommend doing it. But yeah, basically, it's just you know, a guitar for people who like the sound of a Jazzmaster but don't like the look of it, I guess is the idea behind this. Much the same in that, you know, we've seen from other similar parts casters. People have done it with obviously Fender did it with the Offset Tele a couple of years ago. And there's stuff like the Nashville Teles, which have got like a strap middle pickup. So yeah, just this is a combination that's never been done by Fender before, and it fits really well into that parallel universe. Looks super weird. I tell you what, it looked incredible in person at NAMM. So I would highly, highly recommend checking out if you get the chance.
Very cool. Yeah, very cool. I'm really into the parallel universe. It's such a great idea for Fender to just be able to keep doing weird things without having to commit to, you know, like a full production model of anything.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's kind of like it started like that with like the Modern Player series, which were... what were they, 2014, 2015? No, maybe even earlier. Were they?
Yeah, definitely earlier than
that. Yeah, no, it was earlier than that. So the Modern Players were, like I say, they kind of started us down this line. And then I think Fender have just seen that being able to do something a little bit different at a higher price point, you just don't make as many of them and you can just go as weird and wacky as you want. And this certainly fits the bill. But, you know, also... just at face value, it's a Strat with some hot pickups and a block inlaid neck. I mean, what's not to like?
Yeah, very cool. Very cool indeed. Now, Mark Packham, Mad Professor Amplification, the pedal company.
Yes, indeed. So Mad Professor the way the press release describes it is they're using the coronavirus downtime to release some limited edition modded pedals. So what they're doing essentially, I think, is instead of, you know, doing R&D and manufacturing and marketing on some brand new designs, they're just having a bit of fun with some existing ones. So the Ruby Red Boost and the Sweet Honey Overdrive are getting a mod each. The Sweet Honey Overdrive includes the Fat B mod, which is bottom end tweaked to the limit, according even to them. And the idea being that tightens up the bottom end, really fat bottom end on an overdrive pedal that already sounds really good. The idea, I guess, is, harmonically rich overdrive when you dig in, with a bass adjustment before the drive circuit. So more bottom end going into the drive itself. And on the Ruby Red Booster, they've added the Hot Mid Solo Boost, which is tailored for boosting and fattening your solo. So doing some stuff in the mid-range there. Essentially, what I think these are they're existing pedals with some changes to... some kind of EQ and gain tweaks. They're limited edition, so if you want to pick up something that's kind of cool and, you know, if you're a big fan of the brand, maybe something to just, you know, help support them while we're in this period of downtime, as well as, you know, they've got something else on the market that you can buy that is going to be different from the pedals that you've already got. So yeah, cool little things. Good way to use the downtime. You know, again, another one of these brands that I think we don't talk about enough, really, and they are making cool things. And this is just a nice little... tweak and nice little twist on the pedals that they already do.
Yes, absolutely. Very cool indeed. I do love Mad Professor. That Sweet Honey Overdrive is an absolutely incredible overdrive in its native form, let alone, you know, sort of with this cool mod.
Yeah, and, you know, for a company like Mad Professor, who I think are, you know, just a bit above... you know, your small boutique builder, you know, their pedals that, you know, you see them in store and they've obviously got some distribution and things like that. For them to be doing these kind of, you know, they're not like one-offs, but I don't think they're making, it doesn't say any numbers here. I think they're probably just going to make them like until people don't want them anymore or until this kind of downtime is over. yeah, for them to be doing that, I think, is a really cool thing.
Very cool indeed. Now, gentlemen, before we leave this week, I can hear the sultry tones. Is that a word?
Yeah, but it doesn't mean what you think it means.
No.
What does it mean?
Sultry means like seductive.
Yeah, oh, that's, yeah, what, that's what I mean.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah, of the question duck. And
Joe, I knew you were into some strange things, but okay, fair enough.
And this duck is ushering in the question segment of this podcast, which we just about have time for. So we're going to try and squeeze in a question. This is a question that we have been asked before, but I think it's been a few years since we've actually all answered it. So on our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitarnerdsforum, Damien Light asks, tell us, demands, tell us, it's a demand. Tell us the piece of gear that you regret selling the most. Jay Cross, let's start with you.
This is easy for me. Without a doubt, the piece of gear that I regret selling the most is the absolutely fantastic 2005, I think it was, Les Paul Standard that I had. It was a plain top, Trans Amber, beaten up, really, really well played in. I got it for a really good deal and I absolutely loved it. I loved the sound of it. I loved how it played. It was just the right weight. Most importantly for me, when it comes to a Les Paul, is it was a plain top. So it didn't have any of that stupid over-the-top flame that everybody seems to like.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I just Trans Amber cannot just stand. And it was just the plainest looking Les Paul Standard. It was absolutely amazing. And the reason I sold it was because I found a really good deal on a 2013 Les Paul Traditional, which was a guitar that at the time I really coveted. I thought that it was, we talked about it a bunch when it first came out. I said that I went out there and said that it was the best Les Paul, it was the best spec in our lifetime and maybe even longer than that. I thought it was just the absolute best Les Paul. Those traditionals are fantastic. No chambering, no bells or whistles. It was just a really chunky neck, really heavy, wicked Les Paul. Just absolutely the greatest spec. I just didn't get on with it when I bought it. And unfortunately, I had to sell the Standard to buy the Traditional. And I didn't end up keeping the Traditional that long. I ended up selling it to someone. And I really, really regret selling that Standard. And insofar as I've gone back through all the email accounts I can find, I've gone through back through my phone trying to find the phone number of the geezer that I sold it to try and buy it back, but I've never been able to find it. And it was someone who lived in Brighton. He used to come into the shop quite a lot when we worked there. And I've been able to find it. And so I've actually been kind of on the hunt again for something to replace it recently. And I've got my eye on something that I'm thinking about maybe having a little look at, but we'll see.
I know
you've pointed that out to us, and we won't say what it is.
No, of course not. Of course
because
not.
It's on the internet available to buy, but you absolutely should, J Cross.
It's just expensive.
Not for what it is. It's not expensive for what it is. You should.
We'll have to see. But yeah, for me, that Les Paul Standard was fantastic, and that's my big regret.
I see. Okay, Matthew Knight. Next up.
Don't make me tell the story again. so one thing that's been interesting, actually, me and Joe have been recording the Patreons recently about guitar pedals that made us, and it's made me dig through a bunch of old photos. Like I've been taking photos of my guitar rig since I think the day I first bought a guitar home. I wish I had a picture of my Cort and my PV, but I don't think it's probably anything I don't have a picture of. And it made me realize, actually, I think I've got a load of pictures at home, so when this is all over I need to go home and grab a bunch of the really early pictures of stuff. But it flashed up a picture of the 2010 limited edition Winter NAMM Esquire, Mike Eldred Hot Rod mods that they did. So they did 100 guitars in 20 colours, 5 of each colour.
Wow, that is so limited.
For Winter Nam. And we had one in Gax. Not long after I started, we had one in Sonic Blue. And so it was like a kind of like a V-neck. It was top bound only. Had a Billy Gibbons BG1400 bridge pickup. So it's like a really high output kind of humbucker. Just really nicely relic'd. It had the Mike Eldred Esquire. They called it the Cocked Wah mod. So you basically, in the bridge position, it like fixed a particular capacitor to give you this kind of like really like pronounced mid-range, almost like you had a Wah on. And at the time when I started, I just knew I'd never be able to afford it. But it was always a guitar like in the back of my mind. And one day, one came up on eBay and I was just like, I have to go. And so I got the train to somewhere in Kent and went to a theatre where this guy was doing this like tour. I can't remember. He's doing like some band tour. It was like one of those like Whitney Houston tours or something similar, you know, where they do all the covers and the whole stage show. And he was like, yeah, I'm just not using it. And I bought it, took it home. Best guitar ever. And then one day I got blinded by the opportunity to buy an original 1972 Tele, which I also found pictures of. And I was just like, oh my God, I have to buy this original 70s Tele. I think it was like original owner. The guy bought it in. He's like, I'm not using it. I just want to sell it and just get like a guitar that I don't have to worry about, whatever. And I was like, I can't afford to. I've got other guitar. I just can't afford to have both. Because I think, you know, I can't remember how long I'd had the Esquire for, but.
About 5 minutes, I think.
Yeah, it may well have been. I can't remember. I was just like totally blinded by the fact that I needed to buy this vintage Tele. And Jay was like, don't do it. And I was like, I must do it. And I, you know, when you just, I mean, Joe Brandon goes there every week, you know, it's just like, I have to buy it. And I put the Esquire up for sale through GAC, sold it. I think one of the guys at the time who was working in GAC was going to buy it. And I was like, please buy it. Because I think he was like, look, if I buy it, then you always know that I've got it. Then if you want to sell it, it'll always go back to me. And then he was like, I really can't. I think he undenied for like a couple days. And he was like, I really can't afford it. So I put it on the wall. And I think someone walked in and I think Jay sold it like instantly. And the guy was like, this is the exact guitar spec I've been looking for. And as soon as he played it, I was like, I've made a horrible mistake. I knew instantly. And I think it was bizarre because even though I knew and I had the 70s Tele and I was playing it every moment, every minute that I picked up that 70s Tele, as much as I knew it was a cool guitar, it just got worse and worse the more I played it. Oh, and I don't think the guitar, and I was like, I'm never going to find one of those Esquires again. And the thing was, they actually did do, I mean, they obviously did 20 colours. And I've never seen another one. That's the only one I've ever seen secondhand. And I've never, ever seen another one. So for me, that was the ultimate, like,
heartbreak. I tried.
I know. And sometimes, I mean, it's made me realize as well, like, I wish I had the job and the income to never sell anything. Like some of the gear that I had looking through photos, I was like, man, I literally wouldn't be able to live in my flat if I'd have never sold anything. I've had so many amps. And like, I was looking at old pedal boards, like I forgot I owned these pedals at one point.
You definitely buy and sell amplifiers an unusual amount.
Well, I actually have like not sold, I've like sold the odd pedals and stuff, but amps, yeah, I was buying and selling a lot of amps because I never really settled on anything until
most people don't, because you can't really post them, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, we were in a situation where it's like, you know, we had courier services we can use, and to be honest, I've used like parcel to go to ship stuff recently, and it's been all right. But I've kind of settled on amps and guitars. But that for me was the one. The other gear that I wish I'd never sold, purely because the value has gone up so much, was I had a couple of the big Mooga Fooga pedals. And I mean, man, as soon as they discontinued them, everyone went, yeah, I'm going to sell mine now for double the price.
More than that. They go for like sort of like 600 quid, 700 quid at the moment. Yeah, it's crazy.
And yeah, when you can't get them and just everyone wants them. And occasionally they come up on platforms and you might be able to sneak in there and get them cheap, but still not. They've never gone down in value, basically. And they were like 400, 500 quid then.
Yeah.
But yeah, we all do stupid things. Now all I really want is that Esquire. If one came up, I would.
Would you sell your Valentine for it?
Absolutely.
You sell your Hoover?
You sell your cat?
You sell the Strat?
Oh, the cat would be. Yeah.
Would you sell your dad? Would you sell your mum?
Yeah. Yeah, the Esquire. And even, I think I even specced a couple of like custom shops when I was working at GAC, and they still never came close to that guitar. It had a real feel about it. And now I just want to cry.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry we made you relive this very,
right,
very
because
hard
every
time,
time
for
I,
you.
I tell that story about once every year or 18 months on this podcast. And I'm hoping that new people have listened since then and someone might have one.
To be honest, do it every time I put out a post about to get questions from the group, this question comes up. So I don't often put it in our listing, but I figured it had been long enough. And I realised I can't actually remember what Mark Packham's is.
Hello. Actually, I think I'm going to talk about a different one, because I normally talk about the 78 Tele that I had to sell to buy a washing machine. really annoying. But it was a thing that happened that was sort of my own fault. So that's absolutely fine. The one that I am kind of hankering after at the moment and regretting is the 1980, I want to say, Rickenbacker 4000 that I sold to a guy in Brighton. The reason I'm kind of hankering after it at the moment is I'm, as well as listening to a load of thrash stuff, I've been marathoning Beatles albums like over and over, and I've been doing it while I work, and I've got like a fairly decent pair of headphones, and just listening to all everything that's going on with the bass end, and anything where McCartney's using the Rick is just sounds amazing. So yeah,
is that 4000 then?
No. That's like a 4001. Okay. And the 4000 sounds a bit different, but I kind of prefer how that sounds. It's kind of a Ricky cross with a P bass, so you know, a good sound. So while you guys were talking, I've been scrolling back through the timeline on Facebook of the guy that I sold it to see if there's any photos of him recently with the bass, and if not, I might drop him a little message and say
he's definitely still got it.
Has he definitely still got it?
Yeah, like, that's yeah. I'm like 95% sure he's still got it. I'm sure I've seen him put pictures up of it.
That's what I was trying to determine, but I can't see anything from... I mean, he posts a lot on Facebook, so... Yeah,
I'm pretty sure he does still have it.
Okay, I might drop him a message and say, look, have you still got this? Because I don't think he gigs anymore, so let's see. Let's see if I can bring that one back into the fold and make everyone happy.
That would be... Yes, you should definitely do that.
Just pulling that right back to Tony Hawk's. I know we've talked about this recently, but it's so funny how many like punk bands at that time, and maybe, you know, sort of 10 years earlier, were using Rickenbackers, and you just don't see it now. You just don't really see, and I wonder if it's just they're too much money, but you just don't really see punk bands playing Rickenbacker 4003s. And
they're loads of money.
Kind of on that question, do you think that bass more than guitars gets like a single bass becomes the instrument of a genre, like more so than a guitar does?
No, with bass it's different because, you know, the precision bass is the greatest musical invention of the 20th century. So it's kind of difficult because if you're not using a P bass, you're clearly an idiot. So that, I think, is an unfair comparison.
But a genre might be defined by, like you know, for example, you know, the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, the two biggest bands in the world, don't use Fender basses. In fact, the two biggest bands in the world don't use Fenders, you know, so, like, for bass players, which is, you know, like a massive knock on the statement that the P bass is the best bass in the world.
I think that is at different times, though. Do you know what I mean? Like when the musical instruments are kind of less homogenized. Whereas, you know, now you go for the big brands, and you know, if you're, and also music to an extent, like, you know, you look at bands and you go, okay, they play P basses, I'll just get one of those. That sounds great. Whereas then it was like, you know, the reason Paul McCartney has a Hofner bass is like, that's what you could get. You could,
yeah, yeah. There was no Fender distribution in the until the mid '60s, I think, in the UK.
But yeah, even when given like a choice, he didn't opt to play Fender. He had one for a brief time and didn't like it.
Well,
famously,
yeah,
didn't like it.
I mean, I think that's a personal preference, and actually, that changes later on because there is a jazz knocking around in the studio. There's a jazz used on some stuff, and the bass six, obviously, as well. Not McCartney, but the Beatles used the bass six quite a lot.
Yeah, Harrison played
it
when Paul McCartney was playing piano.
Yeah, and John Lennon as well, as quite a lot of that. But you know, I think that's a, I think it's a hard question to answer, Joe. But all I'm saying is I want to get a Ricky, and I want to get that one that I used to have because it's really good.
Well, you definitely should get it. Now, maybe I'll answer my one that, in fact, to be honest, you know, that I have too many to really answer. And that really is it for us for this week on the free episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. So you can, of course, listen to an entire extra episode of Guitar Nerds every week over on our Patreon site on patreon.com/guitar nerds. And you can also find that in the description of this podcast. This week on our Patreon episode, me and Matt will be continuing our trip down memory lane in the pedals that made us, as we talk about, I think this week we'll be talking about our first foray into individual stomp boxes, which will be quite fun. And you can join us on Patreon at the $1 tier. You can get this episode early and ad free every week. At the $5 tier, you can listen to things like the Pedals That Made Us, our Gear of the Decade series, all of the bonus content that we create. And at a $10 tier, you can become an executive producer and enjoy all those benefits, plus the prestigious honor of having your name featured in our podcast outro song. Isn't that wonderful? You can follow us on all the major social channels at Guitar Nerds, at. And you can join us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/Guitar Nerds Forum. Thanks very much for tuning in this week, gang. We'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Bye-bye. Cheers, gang.
Stay lucky.
Jim West, Desperado, Rough Buddy, you look at that, and none of this is gonna display the running this. Joe, Robert, and Sean Hughes, Michael Lowe, and Brian Hansen, Shane M., Jeffrey Woods, Eric Kemmer, and Ryan Meinsler, oh, Gavin Vandalin, and Jacob McGee, Simon Reborn, and Marcus Alcat, Wacky Stewart, Robson, Neil Milton, Rob Basto, Christian Lund, Hansen, Keith Adams, Eric Feidel, Andrew Good. Like guitar nerds. Yeah, like guitar nerds. Ricky Woodchop, a kind of like guitar nerds. Yeah. Jim LaBeeBe, like guitar nerds. Wabba Bacha, like a da da guitar nerds. Little Bapa, Minka, la da da guitar nerds. Yeah. Andrew Good and Joe Partick, Merritt Peters, Richard Subworth, and Jacob Moore, Jamie Kim, Matthew King, and Ken Sayers, Adrian Day, Sean Arbol, John Anglin, and Rob Gould, Tucker Abbott and Ernie Cooper, Ross Edwards, Nate Nick, Stephen Burke, Aaron Sherman, and Rob Gould, Dave Lee, Emily James Baker, and Matt Bellamy, Jake Gray, Blake Wyland, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Losett, Hans Ams, and Derek Rich. Oh, Rob Nordvik, Steve Merkel, J.D. Short, and Robin Smith, Carlos Mancha, Brad Page, and Nettie McKenzie, Scott O'Brien, Paul Corrigan, Will Kerr, and Moore Gravitz. The guitar nerds, shipping up a kind of ladder, the guitar nerds, with a ba-ba-ba-ba, the guitar nerds, chaka-waka-waka, do-ba-chaka, lunga-chaka-hada, ooh.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.